Okay, so part two of an introduction to the concepts of Halachot Nezikin. Again, we explained yesterday that over the course of our time together, which will be a little bit unpredictable because that is the nature of June, but over the course of the time that we have, so we hope to give a general discussion of the first few lot, basically Zion to Chaf, essentially, which are the beginning of the sugyas of Halachot Nezikin, and then after that, God willing, sometime next week, stay tuned, we'll move over to the topics of Halachot Gvul and the Talmud Torah, which are the two other major themes in the parish that we want to cover, and then we'll see how much we can get done. So a little bit recap and a little bit move forward. So the first part of the parak, really the theme of the parak overall, talks about the concept of Halachot Nezikin and the idea that neighbors, if they want to do certain home development projects or certain acts of construction or business or anything within a broad category here, they have to take into account the potential impact on the neighbors, and that could require them to have to take certain measures, such as, for example, making a space between their property and what they're doing on their property and the neighbor's property. So, for example, and let's say an example that we'll focus on today, if one wants to dig a pit on his property, so then he has to distance himself 3 tefachim from the border of his neighbor's property. And in particular, if the property is the kind that would likely have pits of its own. So certainly if there is a pit there already, so then we're especially concerned that you're making a pit and digging holes so close to the already existing pit of the neighbor is going to weaken the walls that surround it, and that's a concern. But you see back and forth in the Gemara that apparently even if you don't necessarily have a neighbor who has a pit yet, but it's something where that's a likely possibility if it's the kind of field where he is, by its nature, going to eventually have to dig pits, so then you could theoretically have this issue as well. And we started to discuss yesterday what is the nature of these harchakos. Are these harchakos part of the general concept of Nezikin overall, as part of the phrase, Halachot Nezikin? So are we dealing here with Nezikin? It doesn't seem like it. And that's especially because the Shulchan Aruch seems to paskin. The Shulchan Aruch actually brings two views about this because it was a Machlokes Rishonim. But it's likely the dominant view that if you fail to create a distance, and through that you do have some negative impact on your neighbor, so you are not liable to pay any teshuvah for that. So that's a major difference between normal mamon shehizik dinim, where you are liable to pay, that's the whole concept of avos nezikin, and as the achronim point out, and most notably the nesivus that we discussed yesterday, that there are certain cases in this parak that would seem to really fit pretty well various categories within the Dalet Avos Nezikin. So why don't we just apply the rules of Avos Nezikin and say that somebody who fails to abide by the Shmiros here should be liable, should be chayis, mitaras Avos Nezikin, mitaras Ad Mamon HaMazik. So what the Nesiva said, and what was expanded on by later Achronim to say a little bit more, so this is a combination, is that there's a fundamental difference with what we're talking about here and what is otherwise the case when talking about Avos Nezikin. that the examples that are normally be included in the Avos Nezikin category would include that which you really could be expected to keep track of and hold on to and keep away from your neighbors. And together with that, we could add that your neighbor would have no idea that it's coming when it comes to be mazikin. So all of that puts a achrayus on you to prevent any problems. But the cases in this parak are more about what somebody is just doing on his own property in regular usage. And to say that he can't do that would mean that you are restraining him from using his property as he could be expected to be allowed to do. So we can't put that in the same category as Haman Hamazik. And in the same context, just as it's unreasonable to put an expectation of no usage at all of one's own property, so too there is the parallel awareness that the neighbor has that this is what you want to do on your property, and therefore he has the ability to protect himself, which is something that we find in Hilchos Nezikin in general. There's a constant balance between what the offender should be considered responsible to stop from happening and to what extent the victim, so to speak, should be expected to protect his own property. And as we explained a little bit yesterday, that in general, when we're talking about Maman Hamazik, so we know that it's not really about onshin in the normal context. And that's most blatantly represented by the fact that an Adam Hamazik is chayiv, even if he's shogeg, and really even if he's honest, even if he creates the harm really with no intent whatsoever. And the Machok Shoshonim, if that applies even to Ones Gomer, who is really completely unavoidable. Are you still chayev? That was Machok Shoshonim. But certainly there's a very low threshold for you to be chayev for the damage that you bring about. So what that seems to represent is that we're not necessarily coming as an Ones for an Aveira here. Somebody intentionally is Mazik, somebody else's property. So then, okay, he's doing an Aveira. But it's not necessary that he's actually violating an Aveira consciously in order to be chayiv for Nezikin. The chayiv Nezikin comes from the fact that there's a loss here one way or another. So if you damage your friend's property, so somebody's losing out. Either your friend is losing out because he now has damaged property and nobody's compensating him, or you're losing out because you have to pay him for the damage. But somebody between the two of you has to lose. And say between the two of you, because there also are cases where we split. But there's going to be a loss between the two of you. So the chiddush of chiyuv and nezikin is that as much as it may not be your absolute fault, but it's more your fault than it is the victim's. So therefore, it's not fair the victim should take the loss. You are more connected to this responsibility than the victim is, at least in a general case. So here, we're talking about something a little bit different. Here we're talking about being a good neighbor. And when it comes to being a good neighbor, it's really a balance between how you decide how you're going to be able to use your stuff and also respect the fact that your neighbor wants to use his stuff, and you should both be able to maximize your utility while minimizing the negative impact on the other. And that's really what this parak is about. And the Chazon Ish wrote that this is something that the Chachamim in every generation have to evaluate and have to figure out what exactly is the standard in order for that to be fairly distributed. So within the Nesivus' formulation, so that could be why it is that we're not looking at this through the lens of Bava Kamma, where there are a few of them, but rather it's a different kind of mazik label and doesn't have all the same consequences and the same rules. And that's the Bava Basra theme, which is distinct from first parak of a Kamma. It's the difference between the first parak of a Kamma and the second parak of Bava Basra. So yesterday we gave some nafkaminas of that, but so far so good, everybody with me. So to expand on it a little bit, So there is a machlokes, Abayi and Rava, if you've gotten to see inside the Gemara a little bit, right? So what's the general difference between Abayi and Rava in these dinim? And there's different lines in the Gemara where it comes up, but you can kind of generalize as to what they're arguing about. And that basically, if let's say, for example, there's no boar on the neighbor's property right now, but there could be soon enough. So Abaye says, okay, but there isn't now, so you can put your boar right up into the border, right up into the mesa. And Rava says no, that if it's expected that there will be a boar later on, so then you still have this halacha of harchaka, that you're still going to have to keep three tefachim away. So what's the machlokas that runs through them? So many of the achronim, like Reb Chaim Telga and others, understand, kind of pashut shas, that it's about, do we look just at what's in front of us, or do we factor in the future also? So Abaye says, we look just at what's in front of us. Right now, there's no boar there that you're being mazik. And Rava is going to say no, that we also factor in the predictable future. And when it does seem likely that there will be, or reasonable that there will be, and the Gemara has different formulations of this, but when it does seem that there will be a war in the future, so then that also puts the responsibility on you, let's say Reuven, the first guy, to not put a hole so close to the wall that it's going to impact his ability to have his war, Shimon's ability to have his war. So that machlokes, if you do perceive it that way, that it's about whether it's just looking at what's in front of us or if you look at the predictable future as well. So here, it could be this is a part of a larger theme. And some of the Afronim make that observation, including the Bukhana Wasserman and the Kovic Shiram, that there seems to be a recurring pattern of Abaye and Rava arguing about such things throughout Shas, and that it's not only a concept here, but it's something that they have a general difference of opinion about, whether this is a perspective that we take only looking at what's in front of us, but also factoring in what's likely to happen. So to give one prominent example of another machlokas they have, so what about Yeish Shalom Midah? And so we know that if somebody, this is now second part of the Sias, in between, right, well, it's kind of synergy, but like just moving around our numbers here, so that's from second part of the Basra, first part of the Kalman, now second part of Messiah. So there we have it then, that if somebody loses property and he gives up hope of getting it back, so then there's no fee of Hashava maker at that. So what about Yeish Shalom Midah? Meaning, let's say that the person has not yet discovered all the circumstances of the law. So he doesn't know that he should be Miyash. But the details are such that when he finds out about it, he's going to say, okay, this is profound. So do we say that, okay, so then Yeish now? That's the opinion of Rava. Or do you say no, that the Yeish is when he does give up hope. And just because the elements are such that he would give up hope as soon as he finds out the fact, that's not a reason to say that we should already assume Yeish has been triggered. So that issue, as Bohanan writes, he thinks that this is machlokas that they have throughout Shas, and could potentially be grasped onto here also, that the same question, do we just look at what's in front of us and say, right now there's no boar on the other guy's property, right now there's no Yeish, it's a biased position in both places. Or do we also factor in the future and say, but there's a likelihood that he will make the board. Yeah.
At least here in our parish, could we also, you know, trust it on to the couple we have on about, I guess, this, I mean, not just here, also the previous parish.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the major issues of the loss of being a constant, I guess, of neighboring units, or...
So, yeah, so... Yeah, so I'm sympathetic to what you're saying. So I'm going to say something similar. That, you know, it's always attractive. The shepasos are always appealing. It's when you can make nachotis and line up, it's hard to resist. So it's hard to look away from the fact that there does seem to be this kind of a pattern. And there are a couple of entire svarim that are devoted to looking at patterns in nachotis and among Amoraim, Sinaim, and in general, rabbinic figures, but you know, going back to that era. And the Ragishavar has much writing about this, about Zerebi and others, and this is kind of these general attitudes that come up again and again in positions that are taken in the Gemara itself. So it's hard to resist that, but I'm a little sympathetic to what you're saying, because what I'm inclined to think also is that it could really be still a more localized machlokas, even though maybe it does connect, and it's hard to ignore that there seems to be a strong parallel here to other iterations of their machlokas. But there also seems to be a basis to plug it in specifically to Baba Basra-related issues, and not only to see it as part of a larger pattern here. So the way I would formulate it, tell me if this is what you had in mind, is that a minute ago we just differentiated between Avakama and Voyachor in the second paragraph of Lavasha. It says, Mazik is one thing, and these Harchak of Mazikin has the same word and some overlapping concepts, but really seems to be coming from a different place with different parameters. So perhaps the question is here, how much are the parameters different, and how much do they share a common logic? Because you could say the machlokes is that Abaye is only worried about, are you being mazik, your neighbor? Or what you're doing, is it hurting him right now? So she doesn't have a boy right now, so it's not hurting him. So you can't define it as any kind of a mazik when there isn't anything right now to be nizok. You mentioned yesterday that the Meiri, in his Hakdama to the Parak, he lays out three different categories of the kind of damage that could be going on in this Parak. There's some which would happen later on because of something you're doing now, such as if you plant a tree. So the tree, the roots will eventually grow out and potentially infringe on your neighbor. But that's down the road, literally. It's down the road time-wise also. And then there is the more immediate, like this building of Bor, where right now as you dig, you're causing direct weakness into the property of the other person. And the third category is that, where it would be immediate, but the item that's being damaged doesn't exist yet. So what you're doing has immediate effect, but the effect is not addressing anything that's there yet. So that category, one could say that a Abaye says, I can't call that mazik. It can't be mazik something that's not bowling yet. While Rava is extending it more into an ephemeral kind of right, that basically your mazik is tchus, that this person has a tchus otherwise to be able to put this on his property. And now it's going to be affected by what you're doing. So even though you're not breaking anything tangible, but you are impinging on his chus, on this privilege that he would have. And that's also something that we're told to be careful for. So if that's the machlokas, so what does that graph onto? So I think that graphs onto the question of what you saw here. Are we talking about basically a concept, a Baba Kama kind of concept, where maybe Abaye's position is more compelling, that if there's no item to be damaged right now, how can we fit this in within the rubric of Nezikin? While if you say that it's not really about normal Nezikin, and it's got different rules than the other Nezikin, and this is really about neighborliness, and how do we divide up the Kliyas? How do we work it out so that one neighbor can function maximally, but at the same time have minimal impact on the neighbor being able to function maximally also? So then it would make sense to factor in what's likely to be coming up in the future. So if you know that your neighbor himself is going to want to build boroughs, and now he's not going to be able to because of what you did, so that doesn't fit so well into a magic model, but it does fit into a didn't train them into a neighborly model. So perhaps that is really what's going on here. Now, this could connect to a couple of other questions that are dealt with by the Rishonim and the Achronim here. So, for example, there is a question that Rishonim bring up that even according to Rava, so why don't we say that do whatever you want right now, and then if your neighbor decides that he's going to invoke his right to build a bar, build whatever it is that is part of the issue, then you'll have to move. You'll have to undo it. So some things that'll be easier, some things that'll be harder. But maybe we should say that why don't we just do it that way? So you can do whatever you want until such time as your neighbor does invoke his right to do something that would be affected, and then you'll have to fix it, then you'll have to remediate. So the Rishonim have different answers to this question. Some have a focus that still you are creating a problem right now, and that's why it's still something that Rav would want to address. But other Rishonim have a different focus. And there are different versions of what they say, but it has to do with that maybe there's going to be a problem down the line when it comes to that. So one problem is some of the Rishonim say that maybe the issue is that many owner rights, that maybe you'll end up waiting a couple of years already, and then you'll have a chazaka of 3 years, and then your neighbor's going to be upset because he's not going to be able to undo your chazaka, so he's going to lose out. So it's relevant now. And other Rishonim argue on Rishon Ben Yonah because they say if you learn the third part, so the halachos of the chazaka, you know that a chazaka only applies when you're able to endure without the other party being mocha. If the other party, if he objects, then you don't have a chazaka. So that only becomes a chazaka when the other party could have objected and chose not to. So let's say, for example, if he doesn't know about it, that's not going to count. And in fact, that's where the 3 years comes from in the third paragraph, because sometimes the guy could be so far away, it could take 3 years for the news to get to him and then get back to the same mocha. So it needs to be possible for him to object in order for the chazaka to count. If we're going to say that Kolzman, your neighbor hasn't built yet, you have the right to build, then you're telling me the neighbor can't be mocha during that time. So if the neighbor can't be mocha, so then that also doesn't count towards the chazaka. So that's not really a concern that Reuven will establish a chazaka, because the chazaka won't count until it's relevant. So to that, some explain that, yes, true, if you're talking about the halachos of chazakas and the third parak of Obasra, now the fourth parak that we're invoking in this future, so if you're talking about that kind of chazaka, so you're right, but technically you don't really have to worry about that. But it's more of a mitzvah kind of idea, not necessarily that there's going to be an actual chazaka. But we know it's easier said than done, these things. So you might think that everything could just be undone at that time. So let's say it's not so easily undone. Or let's say the neighbor doesn't want the hassle of having to try to sue for that, of having to try to have to pursue the legal remedies at that time, and they may or may not work. So he wants just to have it clear as test for him. And this may be familiar, that may be looking back to refresh your memory, but this may be familiar because it was a similar point that was invoked in the first paragraph about the question Rishonim argued about when you have to have a sturdy wall between two neighbors. So what if one of the neighbors says that I'm willing to build the whole thing on my property and therefore I will use a weaker wall? So one of the reasons why some of the Rishonim didn't think that was his prerogative is because if you're using weaker material than is the minute, so then you're going to have the responsibility to always maintain that it doesn't fall down the way. And your neighbor has the right to not trust you. Your neighbor has the right to say, I don't want to have to take you to bed and every time this comes up, but I don't want to have to rely on your credibility here that you're going to be prompt about this, and maybe you'll do it and get around to it. So similarly, could be here also that that's what we're concerned about. Hi.
I remember also when you talked about, let's say, when your neighbor has the ability to protest you building something, something like that. You say, like, oh, I'll rent you a house, or I'll use this because your name is ever finished your project, maybe someone will come up for it whatever the way.
So that's because the Gemara didn't use that answer, though, right? The Gemara said, I just made it, I don't want to. It's a tircha for me to move into the house.
You're in the house. And that's one of the reasons why we say excuse.
Could be. Okay, but it wasn't explicit in the Gemara. But in the other case, the Rishonim said, you know, I don't want to have to take you to court. You know, I don't want to have to rely on recourse to the legal system. And who knows how reliable you are. And even if I theoretically have a right there, but if the right's going to be a pain for me to pursue, so then it's not fair to put that position on. So, essentially, that issue, if you take this view that it's about that, so this is all really within the philosophy of Rava, that essentially saying that we're talking about what could happen down the line. That maybe right now, okay, you're not causing problems. But if there is the likelihood or the possibility that this is going to interfere with the future, so then that's a problem. And that seems to be more in line with Rava's perspective. So there was another issue that the Rishonim took up, and I think this could kind of bring us back to where we started with. So there is also a machlokas like this, that let's say, so we take the position, whether it's Abaye, or sometimes it could be true according to Rava, also depending on the circumstances. So let's say it's a situation where we let Reuven build up until the work, without distancing. Now we know that normally, when we are insisting, apparently there should be six tefachim space, because one neighbor will distance three, and the other neighbor will distance three, if that's the way they normally carry out this. Right, before I ask that exactly. So, when the mask was probably on the machlok is about what Dalai Lama says. So the question here is, so, let's say we don't insist on the first guy, we don't make Reuven distant, because either Abaye or even a version of Rava. So now, let's say Shimon decides, you know what, I do want a boy. But we're not making Reuven move, and Reuven reestablished he was at his right to build. But since he needs six tefachim under normal circumstances, so when Shimon now, who has the lower hand, doesn't have the upper hand, so when Shimon decides he wants to now build on his property, so how far does he have to distance away? So what would you say? Why not six?
Because half of those are on me.
But Reuven was entitled to do what he did.
So he only has to disinflict the only requirement that he has upon himself is to do three from the other person. What somebody did before, that some men, if they want to risk it, then they big teams saying to you guys, as it really would be advisable to speak about them, but I only have my requirements to cover those expected from.
Okay, so.
Yeah, unless the issue is that six buttons will meet another six.
Right.
And then, if he builds now within three buttons, or within six buttons, that's still going to meet another six, not another six.
Okay. So, essentially, you're both right, because this is the Machlokas among the Rishonim. So, some of the Rishonim said, like, Zako, that it is essentially a issue in Hezek, and if we've established that six Tachim is what prevents the Hezek, so now the second guy is coming to build his own door, and he came second, so he really has to be Machlokas six Tachim. But Ben Yonah also quotes a view that says, like, that he said, that, no, that the din only ever was that each of us has to give three tefachim. So Reuven, you got away without doing your three tefachim, so fine. And Shimon has to handle that because that was the din at the time. But now, it doesn't mean that he has to get hit twice. That's bad enough that he has to have your boar up against his border. But that now he should also have to move six tefachim because the whole responsibility is on him. It was always meant to be divided. And therefore, so divided, he only has, which is essentially what Zach B was saying, he essentially only has an achrayus of three tefachim. So, this machlokes is a very nice sefer of Shirim on the Babatra called Ber Yehuda. Written by the Shirim of one of the Rebbeim in Maladimim. This is really a gold band. It's a very nice Shirim there. So he talks about this, and he makes two points, which I think we could combine to then put back to our first point. Sort of correctly, he makes the two points separately, but I think we can kind of combine them. So he says, first of all, that this seems to really be a question of whether we're coming from Bava Kamma or Bava Basra. That if we're coming from a issue that's really din of matzah here, so like Zach O was saying, so if you need six to avoid being a mazik, so then Shimon is coming to build his four second. He's got to stay away six tachim to avoid the hazard. While if it was never really about that, it's basically about being neighborly, so then okay, we're dividing the burden between neighbors, and in this situation, so it happened legitimately, so Reuven is off the hook for his three tachim, but Shimon didn't have to take on the responsibility for those also, so he also still only has three. So that machlokes could go to that whole question. And then he also notes, I think separately, that the machlokes here you find in the Rishonim probably also correlates to Abaye and Rava, and Abaye and Rava would probably have had the same machlokes among themselves. That Abaye would say that it's all about what's in front of you right now. And therefore, that's all that regulates. While Rava would say that, no, we have to factor in the future also. And that plays a role here too. So if we put this together, so the way we started at the beginning was we were suggesting that maybe Abaye and Rava is really about that other issue, about the same issue that he just brought up here, about whether we're dealing with Dinei Mazik or we're dealing with Dinei Shchenin. So perhaps indeed that's really the question here. So are these rules essentially a different version of Hilchos Avos Hazikin, with different parameters, but essentially coming from the same kind of place? Which would lead us to the conclusion that you have to have the whole shear of six in order to have the proper distancing. Or is it basically not really about Nezek, as indicated by the fact that there's no Chi of Teshulman according to that view, and it's really about being neighborly, and therefore, okay, so then neighborly means that you should split the distancing here, but it's not necessarily going to follow that once you have a right to be at the border, to be at the edge, that the other guys, you know, therefore have to go twice as far just to take up the extra slack. Okay, so that was an interesting angle in this whole discussion. I'm going to have to stop here to go to another event. But so tomorrow, let's aim for, I guess, let's say differently, let's aim for the 4:30 slack. And let's try to do a little bit of Parsha, and time permitting, maybe we'll continue a little bit more about this stuff. I would like to get that done this week. And then stay tuned for what's our plans for next week. But our hope, our agenda is a little bit the third Aliyah of Bamidbar, and a little bit more about this. All right, everyone should have a wonderful day. Should be only good things, and God willing, we'll see you tomorrow.